All right, great job, Clement and Cherry. Thank you for leading us in really in an excellent time of worship and breathing life into the songs that you led us with, and appreciate that so much. So thank you for doing that. At one moment I thought, wow, my Mandarin must be getting better, because when Clement was interchanging between English and Mandarin, I thought, hey, I can understand this, as if it's like perfect English. And then I realized, oh no, he's just going in between Mandarin and you even went into Cantonese, right? Yeah, wow. I thought, wow, I'm getting so talented. But he was just translating himself, so. But yeah, thank you for doing that, and impressive, you know. Before I introduce our speaker, I just want to share why we invited this couple, Ronnie and Jamie, to come join us for this weekend. So in the past few years, we have sent some people from on the English-speaking side, both teens and some adults, to Ensenada, Mexico, to partner and work with YWAM. And for the first few years, I didn't have the opportunity to go, but every time people would come back, they would always say they wanted to go back. They want to go back next year. We have to go back next year. We have to go back. We have to go back. I want to go back. I want to go back. And that was just really encouraging and very sweet to hear that people who would go would come back and would just have a passion for God, but also have a passion for God's mission wherever He calls us to go. And so finally, I think it was two or three years ago, I had the opportunity to go. And for myself, I got to experience why everyone wanted to keep coming back to Ensenada, because God is just doing so much. I mean, God is doing, you know, doing great things everywhere. But specifically with the YWAM base and Ensenada, God is just doing some great things. And one of the things that I got to see what God was doing was just providing great leadership in Ronnie and Jamie. And so with YWAM, when you go there, you are learning more about God. You are learning more about what God cares about, and you're learning God's heart for missions wherever He calls us to go. And so at that base, what they do is they partner with different ministries around in Ensenada, or just different organizations, and work with different churches to help provide assistance in their ministries, and also to build homes for families that can't even afford, I would say, a shack, right? They can barely afford a shack. And so through their ministry, they partner with, you know, different churches that come, build homes, but they also provide opportunities for churches to come to evangelize, to share Christ with those that don't know Christ, and more importantly, to experience God's incredible work through the local ministries in Ensenada. And so I was just, you know, my first time going there, I came back thinking, I have to go back. And so I was really appreciative, because that experience and the culture that they created, a lot of that is their leadership. And so our desire is to continue sending a team to go to Ensenada every year. And we thought it would be great then to have Ronnie and Jamie come and spend some time with us, so that we as a whole church can get to know them. So Ronnie and Jamie, they do a lot of different things on the base. You guys are directors, the base directors, so base mission adventures directors. So they are the main leaders there. Let's just put that way, okay? But they also do teaching. Partner. They make contact with other ministries. They also built the base, or they, you know, help put things together. I think Ronnie, you could build this house, this chapel, right, yourself, right, kind of thing. And Jamie's an artist. She likes to design different things, and she's an incredible painter. And so together they provide so much and such a rich experience for anyone that goes to Ensenada, or YWAM in Ensenada. And so, so it's really an opportunity for us to have them come and speak God's truth and God's word, but also really an opportunity for all of us to get to know them better. So that way, if you want to consider going to YWAM, then you will have a great opportunity to get to know them and see why. It's such a powerful and great experience. So let's give Ronnie a warm welcome.
Well, good morning. I'm very excited to be here. So I was looking around this morning, and there's a couple of you that were in Ensenada this past year. Would you guys be so brave to raise your hands if you were in Ensenada last year? So yeah, there's five or six of us that made it down. So I want to ask those of you that were in Ensenada, I gotta find my notes here. I'm gonna take it off here in a second as soon as I find these. So those of you that I'm just gonna do this. I like to move around, so I'm just gonna walk with this. Those of you that were in Ensenada, do you guys remember the theme? The theme verse. What was it? Thrive. Do you remember the verse that it came from? What was it about? Do you remember like any pictures or images that come to mind?
A tree.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm looking for. So I'll explain that to the rest of you in a second. But like David was saying, me and Jamie have lived in Mexico. October of 2013. We made the decision, we were living in Seattle, Washington, and we made the decision that we were going to move to Mexico, quit our jobs, sell our cars, and just go all in. And so that was in 2013. We didn't arrive in Mexico until the beginning of 2014. And we got there, and we've been there ever since. And just to clarify, we're not the base directors. My base director would be upset if I'm trying to overtake him. but we do direct the Mission Adventure program. And it's a fantastic program. And what we get to do is we get to partner with churches all around the world and help introduce them and get them to work with churches and ministries and orphanages and rehab centers in Mexico. And build that bridge and build a partnership. And help connect people. We also work with a lot of YWAM bases all around the world and help them start Mission Adventures and help them run a program that introduces youth into missions, which I'm really excited about. I'm really excited I get to share some of that with you guys this weekend. Okay, so why a tree? Those of you that were down in Ensenada this past year, we have what we call a theme every year. And so we'll pick a verse out of the Bible and we'll use that verse, create a theme around it, and we'll basically make a sermon or a message that we'll kind of preach all summer long to our teams and our students that come down. And so like they said, our theme last year was Thrive. And we took it from Jeremiah chapter 17. And it's this verse that talks about this tree that's planted by the river. You guys have probably read about it or heard about it. And it says that this tree is planted by the river. And so when the season of dryness or the season of drought comes, a season when there's no rain, a season of heat, that this tree will continue to bear fruit. The tree will be fruit bearing no matter what its environment is. Right? So, we've got some rain right now, but imagine if it just stopped raining here, you know, where we live in Ensenada, we're in like the desert. It doesn't rain. My first year in Mexico, 365 days, it did not rain one time, my first year. We've been a little more fortunate the last 4 years, but my first year, it didn't rain one time. I moved to Ensenada, Mexico from Seattle, Washington. Okay? So if you know anything about the Northwest, it was a very big shock. Now imagine here, If it stopped raining for several years, what would happen to these trees? They would probably start to die because they rely so much on rain. You can see like the moss and the ferns and even just the plants that are around the trees are dependent on rain and water. Now, the trees that are closer to the river might do a little better, especially if it's raining whichever direction is north, whichever way the water flows down the river. The trees closer to the river would probably do better because their roots are in the ground and can grow towards the source, the river, right? And that's the image that Jeremiah paints for us in Jeremiah 17. And that's really we're not going to spend a lot of time in Jeremiah today, but that's kind of the foundation for the message I want to share with you guys today. Being rooted in Christ. Having our identity rooted in who God is and who that makes us, who we are because of that. One fascinating thing about roots, I get really amazed at science. I'm not a science guy. I don't know a lot, but I like to read. And when I read something that's really cool, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And do you guys know what the largest organism is on planet Earth? Yes. Honey mushroom? No, it's bigger than that. It's actually a type of river birch tree. Now, if you take one river birch tree and you put it next to one of these trees, that tree is a lot bigger, one of these redwoods. But what's fascinating about the river birch tree is you won't find one by itself. You'll always find multiple trees. Typically, they're close to a water source. But what's fascinating is underground, their roots grow, and when they touch each other, they actually mend and grow together. And what happens is they will continue to grow, and it'll be like a forest of these trees that we see that looks like a bunch of individual trees. But in fact, underground, the trees have grown together. Now, scientists saw this and they got fascinated. And they were like, well, how much did they grow together? Do they just look like they're together? Or are they actually, is it like a bunch of trees? Or is it one tree? How does that work? And what they found was is if they took a fish, like a salmon, and they set it on the ground above the roots, and they let it decompose and go in and work its way into the soil like fertilizer. And they did that way over here on this side of the river birch forest. And they could test that fish for the DNA and know what chemical compound made up that fish. They found that within a couple years, they could come to this side of the forest and take a sample from the tree, and they could find that exact DNA that was in that fish. And so as that fish decomposed, the tree took those nutrients and used it, you know, the tree that was closest to it. But then that tree shared it with all the other trees through its roots all the way to this side of the forest. And so they found that these roots, they're communicating, they're working together. And they even found that on the other side of the coin, that if they had a tree that was a part of this forest that got a disease, or it got sick, what would happen is all the other trees around it would cut off where that tree was, the source, and let that tree die so that the disease didn't spread into the rest of the forest. Isn't that fascinating? And so scientists are saying that it's now the biggest organism on our planet because it works like one big organism, but really it's a forest. And I was like, man, that's what the church is. That's what we are. That's at least what we should be, right? Working together, a bunch of individual trees at face value. Someone walks in this room and they see us and they think, we're just a bunch of individuals. But if they were to really look underneath the surface, we're pretty well connected, right? At least that's what God's desire is for us. So that's the image I want you guys to have, and I'm going to build off of as we get started here. I'm going to start my stopwatch so I don't talk too long. All right. Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. You guys know that verse? Yeah? Yeah, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Now that is, I can do all things, focus on that word. That's the ESV translation, things. The NIV says, I can do all this through Christ who strengthens me. And I like the this better than things. When I was a kid, I remember reading that verse. This is a true story. You guys can laugh. I remember standing on my couch, and I was really little, and I had a plastic bag, and I remember saying this verse in my head, like, I can do anything if Jesus wants me to. And I had a plastic bag, and I was going to jump off of the couch with the plastic bag and hold it over my head, and the bag was going to be like a parachute, and I was going to float down to the ground real slow, right? Just like a grocery bag. And in my head as a kid, you know, I was going to do this because the Bible says that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We read that verse, and in fact, a lot of us have it on plaques in our house. We see it. We see that verse a lot. It's a verse that Christians use often. But I want to ask you, do we really believe that? That we can do anything? Do we believe that we can do anything? And more importantly than that, is that actually what Paul is saying? That's why I like the NIV. Because when you read it in the NIV, so if you have your Bible, go ahead and turn to Philippians. We're going to spend a minute there. Chapter 4. I'm going to get there myself. Chapter 4, verse 13. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. So when I read that in my NIV translation, what is the this? What is he talking about? Well, if you read that, you're going to go back before this passage and see what Paul's talking about. What is the this? I can do all this. What this? What is it? So you go back, and let's start in verse 10. He says, I rejoiced greatly in the Lord. At last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed, hungry, whether well-fed or hungry, or whether living in plenty or in want. And I can do all this through Christ who strengthens me. So that gives us a little context. Do you guys worry? I'm kind of a worrier. Not kind of. I am a worrier. I get stressed out and I worry about little things. I worry about big things. In fact, they're saying in the United States now that the number one disorder is anxiety. Anxiety is literally overtaking the United States. The World Health Organization did a study a few years ago comparing different countries in the context of anxiety, worrying. And the United States got number one. Now, what's interesting is when the World Health Organization did this study, is the other countries that were involved in this study. Lebanon, Nigeria, Ukraine. If you guys don't know anything about those countries, I think it'd be very stressful to live there. Nigeria is in civil war. If you don't know anything about Ukraine, they've been involved in wars way more often than we have. And it's still a very, very hard, very poverty, very poor nation. Lebanon is like, think Middle East, think Africa, and what you know about those places, that's Lebanon. It's like a mix of both. But in America, where the land of the free, the home of the brave, we have the American dream, we are the most anxious. We worry more than those places. It's interesting, isn't it? That we worry so much. One in five Americans has been diagnosed with anxiety disorder. That's more than depression. It's more than any other disorder. We're worriers. One out of five. All right, so in Paul in Philippians says, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Now, I want you to go back to verse 10, and I want you to look at this word. Let me make sure it's verse 10. Nope, I'm sorry. It's verse 11. In verse 11, he says, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. Content. Now, I don't know if we're translating or how this is going to translate, but if you look at the word content, it is actually another word spelled the exact same way. Content. If I have a... Ooh, almost saved it. The content of this water bottle is water, right? But I could also use that same word and say, I'm content with where I am, right? It's the same word, two different meanings, spelled the same, just pronounced different. It's interesting, though, that it's the same word. When we think about content, what makes up something, and then being content. And I know that Paul didn't write this in English, but I think there's something to say about content and being content. Let me explain. You are content based on your content. Does that make sense? If you focus on what you already have, your content, if you focus on what you already have, you'll be content. If you focus on what you don't have, you will not be content. Your content, what you have, whether that's physical possessions, whether that's your personality, the gifts, the traits that you have, if you focus on those, you'll be content. But if you focus on what you desire, what you want, what you can't have, what you want to get, you're not going to be content. You're going to struggle with things like anxiety. When we focus on what we don't have, we become discontent. The things that we want. In verse 10 here, Paul says, but you had no opportunity to show it. And that brings up an interesting concept here. Because every obstacle that we face, every situation that you come to, you have a choice. You have a choice on how you will react. Whether we're talking about a marriage conflict, whether we're talking about a test that you're going to take, whether it's a fight with a sibling or a fight with a stranger or whatever obstacle, whatever situation you want to put in this category, you have a choice. Is it an opportunity? Or do you look for what you need to get through the opportunity? Because when you face an obstacle, a mountain, a circumstance that is tough, where does your first thought go? If I only had this, I could get through it. If I could only do this, I'd be better prepared. Or is it an opportunity? When your car breaks down, is it frustrating to where you start cursing, you kick your car, you yell at all the other cars that are honking at you, you're mad at them because they're not stopping to help you, you're mad at your spouse because you broke down because you ran out of gas and they didn't put gas in it? Or is it an opportunity for you to, I don't know, slow down and reflect? The stranger that stops to help you, is it an opportunity to share the gospel? Where's your opportunity? And I think that's what Paul's getting at here, is that he was content in every circumstance. Now, Paul's car didn't break down. Paul actually had much tougher circumstances. I actually, I broke down one time. I had this little tiny car, and I was driving from a church camp in Florida back to my parents' house in Ohio. So it's a like really long drive. We were going to break it up into 2 days. I had this little two-door Toyota Tercel. It was a 1989 four-speed, so it didn't go very fast, right? Real tiny car. And I had a friend with me, and when I packed, I didn't have any suitcases, so I put all of my clothes and all of my belongings in like big black trash bags. That's for the whole summer, you know, I was going to work at this church camp, and I just threw everything in trash bags. And so we're driving back, the summer's over, got my friend with me, the back, like basically, you know, we're driving, and there's like a wall of black trash bags right here, because we're just in this car, and it's packed with stuff. And we're driving on the freeway, and we're in Georgia, really, really hot out, like, you know, probably 90 some degrees and humid. And we're driving on the road, and all of a sudden my front right passenger tire blows out on the freeway. Now, I'm not going super fast because the car won't go that fast, but I'm like around big semis and cars going fast, and I may be doing 55. And I'm driving and the tire blows out, and when it blows out, the steering wheel kind of turns to the right. And so I like, well, I got to pull over. Like, and even if there was someone there, I'm still coming over. Thankfully, no one was there, and we were able to get over into the median. We get over, and, you know, I have my friend get out of the car, and I've got to get the jack out. And thankfully, we had a spare tire. But to get all that, we had to get to it, which was in the trunk, which was underneath all these trash bags and just all this stuff we had heaped into the car. It's like 95 degrees. You know, there's no AC in the car, so we're already sweating. And there was a guardrail, and so there wasn't a lot of space for us to really work or empty the car. And there was kind of a little ravine drop-off. And so we open up the trunk, and my friend's over here, and I'm taking stuff out, and we have to empty the whole car to get to the spare tire. So I'm throwing stuff down the ravine, you know, like loose clothes and bags are ripping open, and I'm just sweating. I eventually take my shirt off, and, you know, I just look like a, I don't know, like a hobo on the side of the road out here, just sweating, working, and I'm frustrated. Like, why did my stupid tire blow out? And empty the car. I get the jack. I get the spare tire. I go to where the flat tire is. The tire is just destroyed, so we've got to take it off. And so I jack up the car. I take off the lug nuts, and then the tire, you know, it's in the air. It's just ready to come off. You just pull it off. Lug nuts are there. And I go to pull a tire, and I can't get the tire off. And to this day, I don't know what happened, but it was like frozen on the car. It would not come off. There's no more lug nuts holding it on. It's in the air. You know, I've got the jack under the car. I'm kicking it. I'm getting frustrated. I'm getting really mad because this tire should just come off the car. It should almost fall off the car. Like, nothing is holding it on the car. Why won't it come off? But it won't come off. And I'm kicking the car. I'm shaking it, and I'm cursing, and I'm losing my temper. I'm getting really frustrated. And just imagine you're driving by and you see this guy with no shirt just kicking his car. And at one point I got so frustrated. I stopped and I was standing there and I was just, I could not figure out why the tire wouldn't come off. And I got so frustrated and I was about, 4 or 5 feet and I kind of got a running start and I just came and I kicked it as hard as I could. And when I kicked it, remember this is a small car, I kicked it and I kicked it so hard that it kind of shifted the car. And so my jack fell over and then the car fell on the jack. And now I'm really in trouble because my jack that's holding up the car is on its side and the car is on top of the jack. And I'm out on the freeway, and I have no more tools and the best tool I had is now underneath my car stuck. And so in my frustration, I put myself in an even worse situation. So what I did, my friends down here kind of chuckling at me, laughing, because I just had this little temper tantrum. And I actually walked down. I was still, I'm pretty sure I was verbally cussing, but in my head, I was really frustrated, very frustrated. And then I kind of had this moment, and I was like, I should ask God for help. I need someone to stop. We didn't have a phone. This was like 10 years ago or something, maybe 13 years ago. And I didn't have a phone and I was like, well, I should probably pray. We're going to need help. And so in my head, I'm like, all right, God, and it was the worst prayer. I'm like, this is stupid. Why am I in this situation? So I'm praying and I'm kind of walking and I was down in the ravine. And so I walked back up to the car and I had to walk all the way around on this little trail. And as I'm walking, there was this big, long metal bar. It was actually the bar like for road signs, like a steel bar, but there was no sign on it. And it was just laying on the ground in the grass. And so I'm walking and I'm praying and I see that bar and I was like, oh, maybe I can use that. And so I pick it up and I go over to the car. I have my friend come up and we put that bar under and pick up enough to slide out the jack, flip the jack up, jack back up the car, and then we were able to get the tire off because when I kicked it and it fell, it jarred the wheel loose, and the wheel came off. We put the spare on, loaded up all our clothes, and stuffed them back in the car, and we were on our way. But I look back at that situation, and I'm like, man, at the time, I could not have been in a worse situation. This is the worst possible thing that could have happened to me. That's what I had allowed my mind to get to. And in reality, when I look back at it now, it's just a funny story now. And really, the joke's on me because I got so frustrated at something so small and simple. And I know, excuse me, that I missed opportunities in that situation because I allowed my attitude and my frustration to get the best of me. So every obstacle can be an opportunity. And it really comes down to this. If you think that you're poor, you're going to act poor. If you think that you're wealthy, you'll act wealthy. Think about like a hoarder. You know what a hoarder is? Someone that just collects a bunch of stuff. I'm probably borderline hoarder. I have a lot of stuff in my house. and I use this same phrase. Why do I keep things? Because one day I might need it, right? I might need that stuff. But honestly, that is a poor mentality. Because I'm collecting, I'm preparing, I need more stuff, I need to have all this so that I can be ready for something that comes. But a wealthy mentality is, well, God's going to provide and we'll figure this out. And I'm not talking about poor and wealthy in physical terms necessarily. I'm talking about our state of mind. And so if you think that you're poor, you're going to act poor. If you think that you're poor, you're going to need more stuff. You're going to always want more stuff. You're never going to be satisfied. If you're wealthy, you already have everything you need. Stuff doesn't really matter to you. And again, I think that's what Paul was talking about here. There's this idea of positive thinking, or what you think about, you will bring about. It's actually like it's a philosophy that you'll find a lot in Hinduism and Buddhism and kind of the New Age type thinking. Like whatever you think about, you can bring into existence. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if our attitude is positive, then no matter our circumstance and situation, there will be an opportunity. You see, when Paul's talking in Philippians was towards the end of his ministry when he wrote this letter. And he talks about the Thessalonian church. Remember the book of Thessalonians, he writes them a couple letters. That church, when he started it, when he went to start it, it actually happened because he was in a situation where his life was threatened. And in Acts, we read about him leaving in the middle of the night to go on to the next town. He went to, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, Thessalonians, that book, it's that town, Thessalonia, something like that. But that's the town, the Thessalonians, whatever town the Thessalonians live in. But that's where he went. And because he left in the middle of the night, because he was running for his life, he goes there, meets some people, and starts a church. And a lot of times when we think about our circumstances, we're not talking about life or death. See, a warrior, a soldier, when they go on the battlefield and they're getting ready to fight, they don't think about what they need to fight. What do they think about? They think about the assets that they have. They think about the sword, the shield that they're holding. They think about the tactic that they're going to use to attack the enemy. They don't think about, oh, if I had a cannon, I could win. If I had more soldiers behind me, I could win. No, they're on the front lines ready to fight. And they're thinking about what they already have. And so if we can shift our mindset to think what we already have is enough, we'll be thinking in a wealthy way. We'll be thinking in a mindset that will allow us in any circumstance to be positive. A couple weeks ago, me and my wife had this opportunity to do this really cool training. And I'm trying to get to my stopwatch here to see where I'm at. This guy he's like a life coach, but he coaches professional athletes. And he's written a book, and he's got this whole teaching that he does. And he came to our ministry in Ensenada with just a few of us to teach us some of his ways of teaching and things that he wrote about in his book, and just really genius ideas. But some of the things he asked us were, if there were qualities that you would want in your life, what would they be? If I was a genie and you came to me and you wanted qualities in your life and I could give them to me, what would you ask for? Confidence, like confidence in any situation was what I think a lot of us would ask for. Really to just, you know, what would it take for you to say that you have an extraordinary life? At the end of your life, what would it take to have an extraordinary life? And that's where we're going to start to go. I shared with you the story about the car, and I looked back at that situation. And I think, man, my faith was pretty meager. I was so caught up in that situation and got so frustrated. And I want you guys to think of a time in your life where you lacked faith, where you were so worried about something, whether it's a test, a relationship, whatever it is, you were so worried, you were so concerned that you couldn't sleep at night, you had anxiety, you were stressed out about it. And then as it played itself out, and you look in hindsight, you look back on it now, you're kind of like, well, I wasted a lot of time worrying. I wasted a lot of time being so concerned about that little issue that it really wasn't that big of a deal. Can you guys think of a time like that? Where you were so concerned about something. It was consuming your mind and your thoughts, and it ended up being okay. It wasn't as big of a deal as you thought. What we really lacked is perspective. Because if we had the right perspective in that situation, when we're freaking out and we're worried and we're scared, if we had the right perspective, if we could see down the road, if we could see farther, we would know that it's going to be okay. So how do we do that? There's a book that gives this metaphor that I'm going to use. And it's about a lion. You see, a lot of times we have this fear of the unknown. We're scared of whatever situation you're thinking of. We're scared of what the outcome's going to be. We're so anxious to know what's going to happen. So, when you think of a lion, we can go ahead and put that picture up. I want a lion here so we can help us think about a lion. Now, before I start talking about the lion, this idea, this sleepless night, stressing out, freaking out, being scared about situations, this is something that we're going to have to battle every day of our life. If it's happened to you in the past, it's going to happen again, where you're going to come to a situation and you're going to be nervous, you're going to have anxiety, you're going to want to know how it's going to turn out. You want to know, like, I need to know what's going to happen. Am I going to get an A on the test? Am I going to get into Harvard? Am I going to get to marry this person? Is my marriage going to make it? All of those questions we want to know. And those questions are going to keep coming to us. So when they come, I'm going to give you this metaphor to help us get through them. Because every day, we're going to have to make decisions like this. So a lion, think about a lion, all of its good qualities. It's fast. It's strong. It's beautiful. I think it's beautiful. One of the most fascinating things about a lion is its eyesight. Lions' eyes can see 8 to 10 times better than human eyes. They can see 8 to 10 times farther than humans' eyes. 8 to 10 times farther. Isn't that crazy? That's really far. I think my eyes can see far. A lion can see 8 to 10 times farther, and they can do it in the dark. All right, so think about that. Their eyesight is phenomenal. To understand how a lion's eye works, you really just have to understand how eyes work. And I'm not an eye doctor. Hopefully none of you are, because you're probably going to make fun of my description of how eyes work. But basically, eyesight, all it is how we process light. So we have our pupil, right? And our pupil, the light comes in. The light comes in. There's a bunch of really special things in your eye, like the cones and the something else, and you have your retina, and you have all these other really important medical terms. And all they're doing is they're processing the light and they send a signal to our brain, which then interprets what we see. But really what eyesight is processing light. All right? So what makes a lion's eyesight so much better than our eyesight? Well, one, their pupils expand 3 times bigger than ours. So the little black dot that you see up there, even on that picture, it almost looks like it's about the same size as mine right now. Mine won't change very much in size. It will a little. But theirs will get 3 times bigger than mine can get, which allows more light to come into their eye. Lions also have this reflective lens that goes over their eye. And it's like the two-way mirror. You know, when you watch movies and there's like cops behind the mirror watching someone being interrogated. And the cops can see, but the guys on the other side can't see. Lions have one of those mirrors over their eye. It's a reflective lens. So when the light comes in through the pupil, this lens is here, and it reflects the light back into their eye. And it keeps the light in their eye. We don't have that lens. That's why when you take a flashlight and you're looking out and you come across the lion at night and you see its eyes and they just glow. Because they've got so much light that is brought into their eye. And it's the same with other animals have this. Raccoons, when their eyes are glowing in the distance, you're driving and you see something really far away. They have that reflective lens that allows light, and that's how they can helps them see at night. Because any light that they do bring in, they basically double it because of this reflective lens. So their pupil gets 3 times bigger. They have this reflective lens. But the best part, I think, about a lion and its eyesight, see those little white lines underneath his eye? You ever see a professional football player or baseball player or athlete and they put these black stripes underneath their eyes? You know why they do that? It's so that the lights, when they're playing, it reflects the light away from their eye. So when they're trying to catch a football and you've got all these lights, the black light helps push the light away so they can just focus on the football. But if they put white, it would do the exact opposite. It would attract the light. And God designed the lion with permanent white stripes to help attract light to its eyes so that it can see farther. Isn't that fascinating? That it's got these built-in white stripes. When I read that, I was like, no way. Like, I read this in a book, and I was like, I've never seen white stripes on a lion. That's not true. And I was like, it must be, like, inside their eye, like the reflective lens. Like, that's cool, but you can't really see it. And I looked up a picture of a lion, and every single picture had these white stripes, and I was like, that's crazy. So, in the book of John, chapter 8, flip there real quick. Jesus is talking. So in my Bible, it's in red letters. John chapter 8, verse 12. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. So what is light? Jesus said, I am the light of the world. So if we want to see farther in our life, if we want to see farther in our circumstances, if we want to see farther into the future, what do we need? More light. What is light? It's Jesus. If you want to see farther in your life, your eyes require more light. You'll see farther if you bring Jesus closer. You will see farther if you bring Jesus closer. Now, what's fascinating too is if I'm standing next to this lion, pretend it's real. I'm not going to pretend it's real or I'd be scared. And light is here. Me and the lion have the exact, same access to the light. The light is the same. But what I do with the light and what the lion does with the light is a little different. The lion is better at it than me. But the light is the same. The light is the same. We have the same access to the light as each other. But how the lion's eyes respond to the light is much better than my eyes. You ever meet someone in church and they're like the happy-go-lucky person. You could not upset them. They could have 12 deaths in the family and they come to church and they're just smiling and they're super happy. They've got faith that'll move mountains. No matter what, you can't shake them. You know somebody like this? They're happy all the time. They're always thinking from the perspective of the gospel and what God is doing, and that's their heartbeat. They never get down on themselves. They're not a negative person. I can be fairly negative sometimes. My wife would probably say a lot of the times. But I think we all know somebody like this. They have the same access that you and I do. It's how we process and respond to the light. What that person has done is they've learned how to let more light in. They've learned how to open their pupils bigger to see more light or to see Jesus in more situations. They've learned how to process it and interpret it into their own life. And so let me jump to 2 Corinthians real quick. This is again Paul, chapter 4. Actually, let me double check and see here. So chapter 4. Verse 18. So Paul says, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. So let me ask you, what are your eyes focused on? Are your eyes focused on what is temporary? Or are your eyes focused on what's eternal? Are your eyes focused on what you need? Accumulating more stuff, accumulating more qualities and traits, a better personality, better looks, better hair, better car, better boyfriend? More talents, better at basketball, better at this. Those things are temporary. And in fact, you're probably concerned about those things because you're not focused on Jesus. But what you're focused on are the people around you that have those things. And so you're comparing yourself to other people. And you're wanting the things that they have. Are you focused on what's temporary, or are you focused on what's eternal? Because see, God, He has the eternal in mind for you and for me. That is his heartbeat. That is his desire. That is why he sent his son to earth. You can even go back in this passage in 2 Corinthians, and you know, Paul again is talking about eyesight and light again, and he's using this metaphor. And I want to close with this. Make sure I don't trip here. In Psalm 119, verse 105. I'm doing this from memory, so I might quote it wrong. So somebody out there, check me. Psalm 119, verse 105. It says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet, and it lights my path." I think that second, that last sentence I said might be, it's close. But the first part of Psalm 119, verse 105 says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet." Now, in Jesus' ministry, he actually quotes this psalm. Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he quotes this psalm in the Gospels. And what's interesting is we've actually found lamps from around 2,000 years ago, the type of lamps that they would have used. A lot of them, actually. And they're these little round clay lamps, and they're oil lamps. And they have a little wick in them. But what's fascinating is the opening where the light is on the side. It's not, you know, a lot of our lamps, we have glass ones and, you know, they're really efficient now. But they were making these things from clay dirt. And the opening would be on the side. So they'd fill it with oil and they'd have this little wick. And when you hold it, the light would go forward. Or more importantly, down towards your feet. So when you're walking at night, you'd have this little lamp and it would light your path as you walked. And it's fascinating to think about that. I have this flashlight. You guys know what mag lights are? I have an obsession with flashlights. I have like two or three headlamps, and I like the lumens. If you know what I'm talking about, I like the lumens to be above 1,000. Like, I want a really powerful flashlight. I actually thought, if I had my mag light with me, we would turn off all the lights in the room and I would turn my mag light on and show you guys, but I'm scared it would have blinded you. But if I turn my flashlight on, it would shoot all the way across the room. Easy. If we were out in a field, it could shoot all the way across the football field. It's cordless. It's just got batteries in it. In Jesus' time, the best light you could get to go walk at night would have been this little lamp. And as far as you could see was just a couple feet in front of you. You didn't know what was up there. You knew what was right here. And Jesus uses this metaphor. It's used in Psalms. Solomon talks about it. It's used in the Bible a lot, this metaphor. And think about this. The Word of God, Psalm 119, verse 105, is saying that the Word of God is the lamp that lights the path for our feet. It doesn't tell us that it's telling us what the path is. It doesn't tell us the end game. It doesn't tell us how our life's going to turn out to be. But what it does tell us is that it'll light the path that your feet are on. And so if you focus on Jesus, every step that you take, you can confidently take it knowing that you're walking in the right direction. And so whatever circumstance we face, whether it's a tragic circumstance, because that's going to come. We're going to have loss of life. We're going to have tragedy. We're going to have sickness and disease and just horrible things. We're also going to have things that we treat horrible that maybe aren't that big of a deal, like taking a test like not getting into the school we wanted, like not being able to date the person that we want to date. We're going through a divorce or going through whatever it is. If we have the Word of God, if we have that which is going to point us to Jesus, then we have the light that is going to show us where our next step is. And that is going to allow us to see further down the path and see where our life goes. And that's my prayer for you guys this morning. That as you leave this retreat, you guys can step back into your work week, your school week next week. And that you'll want to refocus. We all need to refocus. I've had to do it many times, and I'm by far not the best in this room. But it's good for us to refocus our lives, rethink the situations and where we're at on Jesus. And so after this week, and even this weekend, I challenge you to refocus your life. Are you actually focused on light? Are you actually focused on Jesus? And are you processing that into your life in a way that is allowing you to be best prepared for any circumstance so that you can be confident and have an extraordinary life? And as you do that, you'll be the birch tree, the river birch tree in the forest. And you'll get to share a little bit of that confidence, a little bit of that excellence and extraordinariness with the person next to you. And it'll carry over throughout our church and throughout our community. So let me pray that over you guys. Jesus, we love you so much. We thank you for what you came to do on the cross for us. We thank you that you are our light, that you are our source, that you are our river that provides us with life when hard seasons come. And God, right now I ask that all of us in this room would be able to use your discernment to look at our lives and to address the things that we need to refocus, that we need to change. That you would give us the wisdom and the discernment and the courage to focus on those things and change them. If we need to be more disciplined in spending time in your word, if we need to cut things out of our life, if we need to be more involved in our church, if we need to be more involved in our community, if we need to be more involved in our marriage, if we need to be more involved with our family, whatever it is, God, I pray that you would help us discern those things. And that you would be the source. You would be what we focus on so that we can understand and focus on what's important to you. That we can focus on the eternal and not what's temporary. So that we can focus on what we already have. That's my prayer for us today, Father. And God, we thank you for the rain. We thank you for this beautiful day. And it's in your Son's holy name we pray. Amen.
All right, thank you, Ronnie, for speaking and sharing with us. I like how even off the stage, he's still taller than me. But, you know, great use of the lion analogy and reminder of, you know, what light are we allowing into our lives so we can see better and clearer. So thanks for doing that, and great explanation of that. That's the actual lion on their base in YWAM Ensenada. So if you ever want to come see, and I'm seeing it, it's just a random picture, but thank you for that. You know, one last thing to encourage you to do. One of the reasons why I love this kind of rain, it forces you to just stay in. You know, sometimes there's that false illusion that we can do all different things with our lives, but sometimes with the weather, it forces you to just stay in. And with this kind of weather, I think it's an excellent opportunity for what Ronnie was just encouraging us to do, is to really just take a moment and reflect. You know, reflect, what light are you allowing into your life? And what are the consequences of allowing this or that into your life? And what can happen if you let Christ's light shine into our lives so that we can see clearer? So, you know, take a moment throughout this weekend, and this is beautiful campus, and it's such an excellent place to do that. So take some time to do that and be refreshed. So couple of announcements before Alan comes up. So the English-speaking side will have our next session at 11 o'clock in the fireside. And then after that, we'll have lunch. We'll take pictures at 1:30. And then for the teens, and we'll talk more about this later, at 4:30, we're going to help we're going to help lead the games for the children. So we're going to do that 4:30 in the Kinzer. And so that's the announcements for the English-speaking side.